Today is Wednesday, November the 20th. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Hurricane Storms Helene and Milton have destroyed whole communities in the southeastern United States. You can make a difference. There are still many people in recovery mode. You can play a vital role in helping those affected to recover and rebuild their lives. Your donations to the Red Cross will help deliver essential services and supplies to those in need. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live, that's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Amazon's discount junk store with the name Haul, H-A-U-L. It's here and is full of junk. Amazon Haul is a sub-$20 discount online store to compete with the likes of Temu and Shein. Budget Chinese retailers such as Temu and Shein successfully made Amazon feel insecure enough for it to come up with its own version. Amazon Haul, the e-commerce giant, has been talking about launching a similar discount store with all items priced under $20. It launched in beta and is available as a separate tab on the Amazon phone app titled Haul, H-A-U-L. It kept its promise and ensured a $20 price cap with most items under $10. The product categories include fashion, home, lifestyle, and electronics. It says the delivery time will be between 1 and 2 weeks, much longer than Amazon's typical delivery timelines of within a week and a day or two if you're a Prime member. However, the longer delivery times make sense since the Amazon Haul products will be shipped directly from a fulfillment center in Guangdong, China. Scrolling through the items, you'll quickly realize they're fairly poor quality, but nothing different from what Temu and Shein offered. Unlike the regular Amazon, Amazon Haul is more for impulsive shopping during late-night doom scrolling. This might be why the feature is mobile exclusive. It's similar to the in-app shopping features of TikTok, introduced because it knows how impulse shopping works. Amazon did clarify that all product sellers are screened and that customers can be confident that the products sold on Amazon Haul are safe, authentic, and compliant with applicable regulations. Haul launched just in time for the holiday season, though most of its products may be too low quality to be considered decent gifts. Only some items qualify as potential stocking stuffers or last-minute Secret Santa gifts. The platform offers items as low as $1, a $5 discount on orders above $50, and 10% off on orders $75 or more. If you can't see the Haul tab on your Amazon app, first try updating the app on the store, then look up Haul in the app search bar. If that doesn't work, visit Haul on your desktop and scan the QR code with your phone. If you're wondering how a necklace, bracelet, and earring set can cost $3, the answer won't shock you. According to a U.S. Congressional Select Committee findings, discount retailers like Shein and Temu use a labor exploitation model that relies on underpaying and severely mistreating millions of Uyghur Muslims living in China. Let's not forget the marketplace report that says many of these dirt-cheap items may contain toxic levels of lead inside them to enhance their colors and weight and make them corrosion resistant. Amazon said that all products sold in its stores must comply with applicable laws, regulations, and Amazon policies, which include its supply chain standards for labor rights, health and safety, and sustainability. This also includes providing safe, healthy, and fair work conditions as a requirement for doing business with Amazon in every country it operates. Apple has begun selling iPhone 16 replacement parts. The company faced criticism for years over its resistance to third-party repairs. If you have an iPhone 16 and smash the thing on the ground, you're in luck. Apple has begun selling replacement parts, including cameras, displays, and batteries for its latest iPhone. The company, long resistant to customers repairing their own devices, has been making it easier following years of pressure from repairable advocates like iFixit. A replacement camera assembly will cost $169 for the standard iPhone 16 or $249 for the larger 16 Pro and Pro Max. Displays range from $279 to $379, depending on the model and size. Batteries are $99 or $119 for the 16 Pro, though they'll be more like $60 for the Pro if you ship Apple your old battery back. A camera will run you closer to $189 if you return the defective part. You'll want to check the Apple's official replacement site for full pricing, factoring, and return credits. If you don't have specialized tools to conduct the repair, Apple will rent you the battery repair device that its own technicians use. Apple first launched its self-service repair program in 2022, which provides customers access to parts, tools, and manuals to repair select iPhones and Macs. The company for years restricted repairs to authorized technicians, for years saying that unauthorized technicians could make mistakes that would damage devices and harm the pristine Apple brand, and iOS still reject components that are not authorized by Apple. But these decisions contradicted Apple's own commitment to sustainability because the company's restrictions made repairs more costly and could result in more people just throwing away devices for a new one. An open market ultimately drives costs down and makes it easier for people to hold on to a device for longer. Fortunately, pressure has pushed Apple to open up repair manuals and parts to anyone, and the company will soon offer better support for more affordable third-party components, extending the lifespan of devices that consumers feel will continue to operate perfectly fine so long as they could replace a certain part like a cracked camera or display. Recent data suggests consumers are upgrading their devices less frequently. It's great that Apple has been able to make its devices so durable, just increasing their value. But as customers replace their devices less often, the company has been making up the lost revenue by pushing harder into services where it charges recurring subscriptions for products like Apple One. It recently began rolling out Apple Intelligence, a suite of artificial intelligence tools baked into iOS that require recent hardware the company hopes will convince customers to upgrade to an iPhone 15 or newer. Intel reportedly denies RMA due to liquid metal thermal paste usage. Intel reportedly denies RMA for crashing Core i9-14900K CPU due to liquid metal thermal paste usage. Liquid metal erased the markings and serial number on the CPU. If you own an Intel 13th generation Raptor Lake or 14th generation Raptor Lake refresh CPU, you may want to think twice before using liquid metal as a thermal paste. The latest report from HKEPC claims that Intel has reportedly denied RMA requests for a Core i9-14900K due to the usage of liquid metal. The Core i9-14900K owner had reportedly approached Synnex, a retailer in Hong Kong, to RMA his 24-core Raptor Lake refresh chip because it had suffered from the infamous instability issues. However, the retailer had gotten back to the owner with a negative response, claiming that Intel had rejected the RMA because it did not comply with the requirements. Apparently, the liquid metal had corroded the processor's integrated heat spreader, removing the chip's markings, including the processor model, batch number, and 2D matrix. It's not an excuse that Intel suddenly made up on the spot either. The chip maker had it in writing that using liquid metal thermal interface material can void the processor's warranty. Due to liquid metal's corrosive nature, it may remove the markings on the Intel processor, which are essential during the verification process for warranty claims. Liquid metal usage has proliferated over the last few years because it incorporates different metal alloys. Liquid metal offers excellent thermal conductivity that exceeds the cooling performance of standard thermal paste. However, liquid metal is electrically conductive, so improper application can kill your components, for example. If the liquid metal drips over to capacitors on the chip or on the pins. Liquid metal reacts differently to different materials such as copper, nickel, or aluminum. For instance, liquid metal and aluminum don't gel, so vendors recommend using a copper heatsink. Modern processors come with a nickel-plated copper integrated heat spreader, so there's no problem with liquid metal. However, it will stain the integrated heat spreader and obfuscate the markings if given enough time. That's why, in the Core i9-14900K's case, the liquid metal didn't kill the Raptor Lake refresh chip, but rather eroded the surface. Using liquid metal isn't worth the risk for the average consumer. It's great for lowering CPU temperatures if you're a hardcore enthusiast who likes to overclock and wants to maximize cooling. If that's the case, you'll probably want to delid the chip and replace the TIM with liquid metal rather than just applying it on the surface of the integrated heat spreader. The printer market, surprising number of people just don't have one. The printer market may have been cornered by a single brand, but a surprising number of people just don't have one. New TechRadar Pro survey shows many people don't own a printer. Despite this, HP has cornered a significant portion of the market. Japanese brands are the most popular to own. The role of home printers might seem to be diminishing to many, as cloud storage, document sharing, and mobile devices are quickly replacing the many tasks once reliant on physical prints. However, for millions of people, printers remain an essential tool for everything from school projects to remote work and small business operations. A recent survey conducted across our WhatsApp community revealed intriguing insights into printer ownership trends. With a sample size of 3,676 respondents across 9 brands, the survey's single question, "What printer do you have?" yielded both expected and surprising results. HP and Japanese brands lead the pack. HP emerged as a clear leader in this survey, with 38% of the total sample stating that they own a printer made by the company. HP's share market dominance is particularly interesting when compared to those who do not own a printer, which accounted for 21% of respondents. While HP has cornered a significant portion of the market, a growing number of people are either opting for alternatives to personal printing or simply choosing not to own a printer at all. What perhaps even more intriguing is the dominance of Japanese brands, with the top four, Brother, Canon, and Epson, collectively account for 37% of the total, showing the significant influence that Japanese technology in the global printing market. Brother, in particular, commands 11% of the total share, with Canon at 14% and Epson close behind at 12%. The remaining brands, Kyocera, Oki, Ricoh, Xerox, and Lexmark, collectively make up less than 5% of the responses. This indicates that these brands have their niche but have limited awareness or availability among respondents. The number of people foregoing printer ownership might also reflect urban living conditions where access to printing services is readily available through libraries or office supply stores. In such environments, individuals may find it unnecessary to invest in personal printers. Furthermore, high ongoing costs associated with ink cartridges and maintenance might deter potential buyers from investing in printers. Another recent survey by Tech Radar Pro reveals that while the shelf price of many printer cartridges is less than $20, in the long run, printer owners will have to spend between $5,000 to $10,000 per liter of ink. Intel says integrating RAM into Lunar Lake system-on-a-chip was a mistake, and HP might abandon desktop GPUs again. Panther Lake and Nova Lake laptops will return to traditional RAM sticks. Intel Lunar Lake mobile CPUs controversially integrated system memory into the system-on-a-chip, preventing users from installing additional RAM. The company now partially blames the decision for its latest disastrous earnings report. Furthermore, Intel's restructuring plans might involve downsizing or ceasing development Arc desktop GPUs. During the company's third quarter 2024 earnings call, Intel confirmed that its future laptop chips will return to the traditional use of RAM sticks, reversing Lunar Lake's radical shift to baked-in system memory. The company is also reassessing GPU development over the coming years. The recently introduced Lunar Lake Core Ultra 200-volt Lite Mobile CPUs come with either 16 gigabytes or 32 gigabytes of memory built into the package. Intel claims that foregoing SODIMM sticks reduces power consumption during memory transfers by 40%, but users are stuck with the RAM that ships with the device. When asked whether the company would continue using this design, CEO Pat Gelsinger confirmed that future architectures such as the Panther Lake and Nova Lake won't use on-package memory. Moreover, Gelsinger described Lunar Lake as a one-off project initially intended for a niche market before it grew in response to the emerging AI PC market. Intel CFO David Zinsser admitted that integrating system memory significantly impacted Lunar Lake's gross margins. The comments were made during an earnings call following the company's third quarter 2024 financial report, which showed a $16.6 billion net loss, 10 times the previous quarter loss of $1.6 billion. Analysts expect Intel to post billions in losses for 2024 overall, Chipzilla's first annual net loss since 1986. When discussing the future, Gelsinger mentioned plans to streamline the company's product stack to simplify development. This means fewer SKUs with discrete graphics on the chopping block. Gelsinger said the market will have less demand for dedicated graphics cards in the future. Amazon ends free ad-supported streaming service after Prime Video with ads debuts. Amazon is shutting down Freevee, that's F-R-E-E-V-E-E, its free ad-supported streaming television FAST service, as it heightens focus on selling ads on its Prime Video subscription service. Amazon, which has owned IMDb since 1998, launched Freevee as IMDb, Freedive in 2019. The service let people watch movies and shows, including Freevee originals, on demand without a subscription fee. Amazon's streaming offering was also previously known as IMDb TV and rebranded to Amazon Freevee in 2022. According to a report from Deadline this week, Freevee is being phased out over the coming weeks, but a firm closing date hasn't been shared publicly. Explaining the move to Deadline, which is an online entertainment news magazine, an Amazon spokesman said, "To deliver a simpler viewing experience for customers, we have decided to phase out Freevee branding. there would be no change to the content available for Prime members, and a vast offering of free streaming content would still be accessible for members and for non-Prime members, including select originals from Amazon MGM Studios, a variety of licensed movies and series, and a broad library of fast channels, all available on Prime Video. The shutdown also means that producers can no longer pitch shows to Freevee as Freevee Originals, and any pending deals for such projects have been canceled. Freevee shows still available for free. Freevee original shows include Jury Duty with James Marsden, Judy Justice with Judge Judy Scheindon, and Bosch Legacy, a continuation of Prime Video original series Bosch. The Freevee series are expected to be available to watch on Prime Video after Freevee closes. People won't need a Prime Video or Prime subscription in order to watch these shows. As of this writing, one will be able to play some Freevee original movies without logging into a Prime Video or Prime account. Prime Video has also made some Prime Video originals like The Lord of the Rings. The Rings of Power, available under Freevee section in Prime Video, where people can watch for free if they log into an Amazon Prime Video or Prime subscription not required account. Before this week's announcement, Prime Video and Freevee were already sharing some content. Bloomberg reported this week that some Freevee shows will remain free to watch due to contractual prohibitions. It's unclear what might happen to such Freevee original content after said contractual obligations conclude. Amazon's fast service seemed redundant after Amazon launched the Prime Video ad tier in January. With the subscription tier making money from subscription fees and ads shown on Prime Video with ads, it made little sense for Amazon to continue with Freevee, which only has a ladder revenue stream. Pushing people from streaming off of Freevee to Prime Video could help Amazon attract people to Prime Video or Amazon's e-commerce site and simplify tracking what people are streaming. Meanwhile, Amazon plans to show more ads on Prime Video in 2025 than it did this year. Two anonymous sources told advertising trade publications Adweek in February that the two services were confusing subscribers and ad buyers. At the time, the publication claimed that Amazon was laying the groundwork to kill Freevee for months. It cited two anonymous people familiar with the matter who pointed to moves like Amazon shifting Freevee technical workers to work on the Prime Video ads infrastructure and Amazon laying off Freevee marketing and strategy employees. In February, Amazon denied that it was ending Freevee, saying it was an important streaming offering providing both Prime and non-Prime customers thousands of hit movies, shows, and originals, all for free, per Adweek. Freevee demise comes as streaming providers try navigating a booming market where profits remain elusive and ad businesses are still developing. Some industry stakeholders and analysts are expecting more consolidation in the streaming industry as competition intensifies and streamers get increasingly picky about constantly arising subscription fees. The end of Freevee also marks another product in the Amazon graveyard. Other products that Amazon has killed since 2023 include Astro for business robots, Astro Halo fitness trackers, the Alexa built-in smartphone app, and the Amazon Drive file storage service. Black Friday is a colloquial term for the Friday after Thanksgiving in the United States. It traditionally marks the start of the Christmas shopping season in the United States, and many stores offer highly promoted sales at discounted prices and often open early, sometimes as early as midnight or even on Thanksgiving. Beware of fake sites mimicking Black Friday deals if you happen to be shopping online. Phishing scams are common around the holiday shopping season. Scam shopping websites are common around the holidays, and cybersecurity researchers have spotted examples masquerading as L.L. Bean, Wayfair, and others. Cybersecurity researchers say that a scamming group has been operating fake websites advertising Black Friday deals for popular brands in order to steal shoppers' credit card information and personal details. In a new report, the firm Eclectic IQ says it believes the group behind the phishing websites, which it dubbed Silk Spectre, lures customers in the United States and Europe to websites that mimic real companies with promotions for deals up to 80% off. The campaign leveraged the heightened online shopping activity in November, the peak season for Black Friday discounts. Eclectic IQ wrote the following: the threat actor used fake discounted products as phishing lures to deceive victims into providing their cardholder data and personally identifiable information. Some of the websites run by Silk Spectre include NorthFaceBlackFriday.shop, WayfairBlackFriday.com, LLBeanBlackFriday.shop, BlackFriday-Shoe.top, IkeaEUOnline.com, and DopeBlackFriday.shop. When a shopper visited one of those websites, Silk Spectre uses popular internet tracking tools from Meta and TikTok called Pixels to detect where the shopper is located and translate the page to their native language, making it appear more authentic, according to Eclectic IQ analysis. The sites use the popular Stripe payment platform to collect shoppers' credit card information and other details to further make the purchases appear legitimate. But as shoppers entered that sensitive information, Silk Spectre's websites were collecting and transmitting it to an external server. Eclectic IQ warned that some of the information collected could also be used to target victims with further attacks to compromise multi-factor authentication and breach sensitive accounts. Shopping scams are common in the build-up to the holiday season, and the Federal Cybersecurity and Information Security Agency, which is a government agency, the CISA, recommend that shoppers take several precautionary steps to stay secure. That includes checking to ensure the device you're shopping is up to date, creating strong passwords on your shopping accounts, and verifying that the websites you are buying from are legitimate. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and everything in between. A buddy of mine, Oscar, reached out to me, and he was struggling with his resume. He was coming into a situation where he felt like he was not getting enough attention to all of these different applications he was putting out. And he forwarded his resume over to me, and this is where we start to get into more of that technology field where we are so tempted to dive in. We're so tempted to look at different options that we kind of forget what they are. I looked his resume over, and as I'm going through, I realized that there were a number of empty terms that were being used in this resume, and these different terms were kind of generic. And I said, "Oscar, who wrote your resume for you?" He said, "ChatGPT." And then I knew the problem, or at least one potential problem. His resume was filled with a lot of AI-generated emptiness. It did not capture the soul of who he was. It really came across as a robotic speech about the job he wanted, the job he was seeking, the various directions that he wanted to go in, but without capturing what was really individualistic about him, that key component that we all need to set ourselves apart from others. The latest statistics out there say that there are probably around 25% of the resumes that are out there that are being generated by nothing more than artificial intelligence. And if you're going to go to ChatGPT, if you're going to go to Microsoft Copilot or any of these different AI platforms and you're going to seek for them to generate your resume, you're going to find your resume does not look different from those others, but very close to those others that are generated out there. That's rough. That is disturbing when you're trying to get a role based on you. So what is the secret here? What is the key thing that we all need to be paying attention to? And that is that ChatGPT, artificial intelligence, whatever its form is, needs to be double-checked, triple-checked. You need to use ChatGPT if you're using it for anything, much like the line from Pirates of the Caribbean, the first movie, more as a, not so much as a rule, but as a guideline. You need to have it set up your framework. You need to use it to give you ideas. But really, you need to be, as a human, going through every single word that it puts out. You need to make sure that it's not copying anything that you've put into it, and treating that response that you get out of it as golden. It's not silver. It's barely even bronze. So what do we need to do here? Watch for those buzz terms. A lot of those different buzz terms, the buzz phrases, buzz words that you're using need to be backed up with real examples. They need to dive deep into how that works. Okay, so if you call yourself a team player, you need to explain why you're a team player, how you're a team player, what benefit that brings with you to the job. This idea of cutting and pasting and just dropping it in isn't going to work. You need to pay attention to everything there. You need to make sure that your sentence structures, your bullet points, your everything is words out of your own mouth. If you typically communicate on a certain level and all of a sudden you're sitting there, you're going, oh, ChatGPT makes me sound so much smarter, that may be a sign for you. I've never heard of this buzzword before. Maybe you need to think about pulling that out. You need to be going through every single bit of this. And you need to be thinking about how you're approaching it. Anything you're doing with artificial intelligence should be a starting point. It should be your first run at this, the first draft. But then you need to go over it again and again and again. You need to make your resume not so much of a rehash of what the job posting was, but personalized. Everything about it should be talking about you and how you are different from the others. Everything you should be putting into whatever you're putting out, whether it's a resume, whether it's a new article, a new document that you're doing, it should look like you put every word on that page, not some faceless automaton that barely understands the real world. You need to stand out as a human being that has brains, blood coursing through the veins, and a passion for that job. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. OpenAI is burning money and bridges. OpenAI, under the leadership of Sam Altman, is facing significant financial challenges as it heads into 2025. The company is described as a giant furnace that burns money and electricity, primarily due to the operational costs associated with its flagship product, ChatGPT. Despite boasting a large user base, the majority of users do not pay the subscription fee, leading to substantial losses. OpenAI is projected to lose $5 billion this year, with operational costs potentially reaching $37.5 billion annually by 2029. A significant portion of OpenAI's funding and computing resources comes from Microsoft. However, recent developments suggest that Microsoft's support may be waning, following a tumultuous period where Altman was ousted by OpenAI's board. The relationship between the two companies has deteriorated. Microsoft appears to be withholding the necessary computing power and financial backing that OpenAI requires to sustain its operations. In the evolving landscape of AI, companies that pivot towards enterprise solutions and government contracts are likely to thrive. Rivals like Meta and Anthropic are already making strategic moves in this direction. For instance, Meta's Llama models are open source, and Anthropic has partnered with Palantir and Amazon Web Services to provide AI tools to the Department of Defense and U.S. intelligence agencies. In contrast, OpenAI has attempted to enter the government sector by partnering with Carahsoft to sell ChatGPT licenses. However, the efforts have yielded limited results, with only $108,000 in licenses sold to NASA and $100,000 to the Department of Agriculture, which is relatively minor compared to their projected operational costs. OpenAI is also grappling with internal conflicts, particularly between Altman and Elon Musk, a co-founder who has publicly criticized the company's direction. Musk has claimed that he is the reason OpenAI exists and has expressed dissatisfaction with its current trajectory. As OpenAI navigates these challenges, it remains to be seen whether it can adapt its business model effectively to secure a sustainable future in the competitive AI landscape. The focus on government contracts and enterprise solutions may be crucial to its survival, especially as the company faces mounting financial pressures and a shifting relationship with key partners like Microsoft. The brain-computer interface. This is based on an article that appeared in Digital Trends. Brain-computer interfaces, with the acronym BCI, have become a serious area of study in research labs, rapidly advancing from research labs to real human trials, perhaps most famously by the Elon Musk company Neuralink. While this promises individuals with disabilities a greater degree of freedom and control, along with potential applications in gaming and healthcare, significant technical, ethical, and regulatory challenges remain. BCIs are devices that bridge the gap, essentially translating between your brain's analog electrical signals and external digital machines, bypassing the conventional communication channels for different tasks, for example, vision, movement, and speech. BCI links the brain's electrical activity and the external world to augment human capabilities in interacting with the physical environment. A 2023 study from the journal Brain Inform reads, BCI provides a non-muscular communication channel and facilitates acquisition, manipulation, analysis, and translation of brain signals to control external devices or applications. Modern BCIs evolved in the 1970s through the work of UCLA's Dr. Jacques Vidal with funding from the National Science Foundation, who coined the term brain-computer interface. BCIs have found clinical use in a variety of applications, from mapping the inner workings of the brain to augmenting human cognition and motor skills. BCIs are even being used to restore physical mobility in patients suffering from injury and disease, such as ALS or brainstem stroke, or people who are locked in, cognitively speaking, intact, but without useful muscle function. You might assume that all modern brain-computer interfaces involve a brain surgery, but the technology actually comes in many forms. There are wholly non-invasive types that we're all familiar with, such as EEGs and MRIs, which simply monitor and record brain activity, And then there are what is classified as partially invasive endovascular EEGs, which use a catheter to deliver electrodes into the brain without requiring open brain surgery. Non-invasive BCIs pick up the brain's electrical impulses through the patient's skull and scalp and transmit them directly to the external device. One of the biggest problems with externally worn BCIs is its comfort and usability. Non-invasive BCIs can be uncomfortable to wear for extended periods due to bulky electrodes and headsets. It's why the idea of invasive brain implants can become the future of where this technology is headed. Implantable BCIs takes the impulses directly from the brain matter the chip is sitting on and translate them into commands. It then wirelessly relays those command signals to an external device which carries them out. If you could implant those EEG electrodes under the scalp, you wouldn't have to put them on and take them off every day, and they would be invisible. After a 6-year study and getting FDA approval in 2023, Neuralink launched its clinical trial for its first implantable chip, completing the surgery in January of 2024 on its first patient. In just a couple of months, Neuralink had posted an update showing the patient controlling a laptop to play online only with his brain, which he compared to using the force on the computer. While implanted BCIs feel like the future of the field, but they certainly come with their own challenges. For example, even with implanted BCIs, which provide a higher quality of signal, long-term stability remains an issue. These devices can degrade over time due to biological tissue reactions or mechanical failures, limiting their usability and lifespan for continuous applications. The implanted BCI also doesn't overcome the hurdle of all the training and calibration required, which poses a significant challenge for BCI technology. Users often need extensive practice to gain effective control over these devices, making the process both time-consuming and sometimes frustrating. Neuralink has an app in development to help with this process, helping patients along to train their minds to better control digital devices, which has already been tested with monkeys. The data generated by BCIs, our emotions, intentions, and thoughts are intrinsically personal and raises the risk that such data could be unintentionally collected and misused. This brings to mind the 2002 movie The Minority Report by Steven Spielberg. The film dealt with profound themes surrounding crime and punishment. It challenges the notion of free will versus determinism, questioning whether individuals should be punished for crimes they have not yet committed in a technologically advanced society. The movie presented a cautionary tale about the potential consequences of sacrificing individual freedoms for the sake of security. Spielberg's film invites viewers to reflect on the implications of a world where the state can predict and punish thoughts, ultimately questioning the very foundations of justice and morality in society. BCI's adoption also creates issues with autonomy, consent, and accessibility. What's to stop someone from being forced to use a BCI against their will or without fully understanding its consequences? These are serious concerns for the future, even if we're still a long way off from really needing to face them. Neuralink aims to develop an interface that allows direct connection of a human brain and computer technology. If successful, you might someday expand your processing capabilities and sensory perception through hardware upgrades. That's the futuristic angle that Elon Musk pitched when first introducing this new endeavor. Brain-computer interfaces have been implanted in humans for the first time. A brain-computer interface is now in clinical trials on human patients, the first time this has ever happened in the United States. With all the buzz around Neuralink, one might expect this breakthrough would come from Elon Musk's moonshot company. However, the honor goes to lesser-known brain interface technology leader Synchron and its Stentrol device. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, we've got to start thinking about holiday shopping.
What are you getting me?
I haven't figured it out yet. I'm hoping that through our conversation here, I'll get some ideas.
Well,
that's what I tell my wife all the time.
There's always room for gift cards.
Okay, there you go.
And by the way, that's also true for... Look, I want to focus because I think enough of us out there who... Well, not everybody knows what they're doing in this realm. You got to work from home. Maybe 5 days a week, maybe 9 days a week, maybe one day a week, but you got to work from home.
Yeah. The world has distinctly changed in that regard, yeah.
Indeed. And sometimes when you work from home, you can't be at home because something's happening at home and you got to go to a coffee shop or somewhere. So, travel and all of that has its ugly head. So let's get into things that people who work from home might find useful.
Okay.
And let's start with travel and mention charging.
Yes, if definitely.
Your current phone eats more power during charging than any phone you've had before, right?
Yeah.
Right? It does not necessarily take longer if you've kept up with the right rating on a charger. But you probably have friends who put it on the charger, 3 or 4 days, and then still find it's only up to half. So,
yes, I've seen that.
Let's talk gallium arsenide and those new chargers that don't overheat when they're pumping up a lot of juice and suggest that's on the shopping list.
Yes.
Get them a faster, better, more powerful charger.
The easy way to look for that is capital G, lowercase a, capital N.
That will do it.
And just look for those chargers. Those are going to be the far more efficient, far faster chargers. Yes.
Indeed. Now, the paperless office never happened.
And I don't think it ever will, but...
Well, outside of the bathroom.
We're getting closer, but yeah.
Well, sometimes the bathroom's paperless, but you got to take care of that. I'm fond of Epson printers.
Yeah.
They've always done pretty well by me. Even the one I have right now is crippled and getting by on kind of one leg, but it still works.
Yeah.
What I love about it, I haven't ever had to buy more ink for it because it's an eco tank. It's in their eco tank series.
Okay.
With the big squirt bottles of ink that you can go in and refill.
It's a big, huge tank. Is it outside of it?
Oh, no. The tank still fits in.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you don't have to open the top anymore. It's a front load, but that tank is refillable, and that's the difference of EcoTank. So, if you don't have anything against Epson, take a look at the Epson EcoTank line. It spans a lot of different stuff. There are many models to tailor it, so decide either what your recipient needs or what you want to spend, and narrow it down to EcoTank, and I think they'll be happy. Some of those include fax or scanner features. I'm not actually, nobody uses real fax anymore.
You would think that, but I did have to send a fax about 2 months ago.
And the online service did it, right?
No, not for this one. I had to fax over a document, so I had to truck halfway across the city over to the local FedEx place or whatever it is. It paid like $2 for this. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Now, home offices.
Yeah.
Always a confined space. Never big enough.
Yeah, very true.
And it's really, really hard to fit a second monitor on the desk.
Okay.
But there is another way. Your wall can be a second monitor with a fairly inexpensive little projector.
Sure. Yes, definitely.
In fact, some Anchor, for example, has some that are kind of soda can size. So
okay, yeah.
You can be really small there. For your comfort, for their comfort.
Yeah.
Humidifiers or the things I call de-stinkifiers, air purifiers.
Yeah.
I try to find ones that don't cost you a fortune in filter replacements over time. And they're out there, and that's a way you may want to look. Shredders.
Okay.
How much stuff is coming in you never want anybody else to see? Right?
Way too much. I have a box that sits over here, and that is my burn box, is what that is.
Okay.
It saves on firewood. What can I say? Although I imagine if I ever have the cops show up, they're going to be leafing through a lot of papers there.
Well, it's probably micro robots by now. Scanners with automatic document feeds. Anytime you've got to ingest things on paper that are more than one page.
Yes, yes.
Something because, look, if you're out there and you're getting younger, you may not need this, but I'm going to suggest a magnifying glass or a Fresnel lens.
Okay, sure.
Also, a mini workbench size vacuum, the handhelds. You could find these at Home Depot, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
And a Yeti cup. I don't care if it's there to keep your coffee warm, if you're still on that fix where you need caffeine every 20 minutes, mm-hmm. or keep water in there and just stay hydrated. Either way, it's better for you than not having it there.
Yeah, the Yeti cup is a very nice cup. We've got a few of those in the house. And
well, I'm coming over to your house and robbing them.
Marty, why are you here?
Oh, hello.
You traveled
over there.
How many miles to get here? Oh, wow. A lot of good ideas there. A lot of good Christmas idea building there. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group has a presentation, Holiday Tech Gift Ideas. Thursday, December the 5th, meeting time is 7 p.m. It's a hybrid meeting at Scarsdale Public School, located at 54 Olmsted Road in Scarsdale, New York, and an online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, December the 6th. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The King's Bite Computer Club meets Tuesday, December the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at the Park Plaza Restaurant, 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. The New York Amateur Computer Club is planning a hybrid meeting, and the site is to be announced. Thursday, December the 12th, meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, December the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is limac.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to Hank at pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.